you. Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, I'm Tracy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tracy.
So last week we were talking about resentments. We were also talking about our character defects. And now we're going to go on to 10, 11, and 12. I mean, we don't have much time, so I'm going to try. We're going to try to be as thorough as we can with limited time. But now, on page 84, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I think that's a really, really, really important paragraph. This is something that I try to do every day. Am I perfect at it? No, by no means am I perfect at it. But now that I do this, and if I say something occurs in my life, or I have an interaction with someone, and I speak ill, or I offend somebody, I feel it. I feel it inside, and it doesn't feel right. So I ask God then to guide me, and perhaps I need to make an amends. Perhaps I need to call my sponsor. Perhaps I need to just make it right, whatever it is. And this is something we do every day when we get to that point in our sobriety. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And I say that a lot because, let's face it, we're all sick. Some are sicker than others. And it's not always an easy thing to deal with personalities and sometimes it's tough, but we have to understand we are all sick. And love and tolerance, that's it. It's our code. And that's what we're here for, to help others. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. And I've heard so many situations where someone would go to a party or some sort of event and take a sip of something and there's alcohol in there. And a couple of times, either they spit it out or they're they hold it in their mouth and then they swallow it. But it's oh my God, they recoil. I finally understand what that means. That's never happened to me, thank God. But I can't even imagine, because when that alcohol touches your lips, And that's what we do. We recoil from it as if it's a hot flame. Next page. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. That's one prayer that I constantly use. Thy will be done, not mine. Because when I run the show or when I take things into my own hands, it's always run by self-will. So it's never the right answer. Because let's face it, I'm going to do everything that feels comfortable. And sometimes we have to feel uncomfortable to grow and to get through things. I know that for me, if I'm not spiritually connected, if I'm not doing all the things, I feel it. I feel off. I feel like I'm off the beam. I don't feel connected to my higher power. I start to isolate, and that's never good because our disease wants us dead. and it's doing push-ups and it's getting ready. You know, it's always there in the back of our minds. We have to work at it every single day, every day. But we must go further, and that means more action. So then we come up to step 11, which suggests prayer and meditation. In the beginning, I simply just would say the Serenity Prayer because I was so broken. I just needed guidance, so I would do all the prayers, you know, like the Our Father, this, that, and the other thing. But as my spirituality grew and I became closer and more connected to my higher power, I have more of a dialogue with my God. Like I can see my God in a seat next to me and just have a conversation. I also do. I pray a lot in the car or in the shower. You know, I just feel like, and I'll talk out loud because I live alone, so people don't think I'm crazy.
yeah, we know better.
So I do try to have a dialogue with my God now, and just talk. And or I take pen to paper, and that seems to help me as well. You know, I'll just like put something on paper, and honestly, it's like I'm talking to God, and then I just sit quietly, whatever my problem may be, or my dilemma, or my joy, whatever. And then I take my journal out and I just write, and it sometimes I don't even realize what I write, and I go back to it and read it. And I'm like, I wrote that. Anyway, but that's how I pray. Everyone is different. I'm not the best at meditation. I try really hard. I do like the that insight timer sometimes. Guided meditation helps me, but it's not always the best. Like it's sometimes hard for me because I'm such a busy person. I'm constantly going, and so is my mind. And it's hard to sit there and take a break, and take a breath. But I do know that when we pray, we're talking to God, and when we meditate, we're listening. So I need to listen more. I need to listen to what my God has to say. When we retire at night, on page 86, that's our nightly review. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. When we Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for ourselves, of what we could pack into the stream of life? So my sponsor has me write this in like questions. Were we resentful? Were you resentful? And I write either yes or no, and I say what the resentment is. There's also an app on the phone, so they made it very easy for us to do this. And you can actually share it with someone, and I share mine with Tracy. And basically just kind of like telling on yourself, and if you've had any issues at all. And it's wonderful when you share it with someone because you kind of can get feedback, and It's a wonderful thing to do. It kind of keeps you on your toes, and it keeps you aware of where you're at. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. And I can only speak for myself. And my experience, but I'm a big self-pity person, a big worry wart. So I ask God to please take that from me and remove my character defects and take me through the day and give me a sober day, please. You know, I'm going to move on over. Let's see. I'm going to move on over to step 12 since we don't have that much time. Working with others, on page 89. The 12th suggestion, carry this message to other alcoholics. And this is my favorite. This is what keeps me sober. Sitting here and sharing my experience, strength, and hope. going to beginners meetings and meeting newcomers when they come in and offering my guidance, offering my phone number, you know, whatever the case may be. Like today I was at work and I had two calls and they were step 12 calls. I mean, I couldn't go, but one of them was very serious. And, you know, I'm like, I wanted to leave work, but I couldn't, of course. But then I have to like try and get someone else to help this individual. And it just feels wonderful that I can be of service to others. You know, I spent my entire life being I was very selfish, self-centered, and all I thought about was how everything benefited me. And now I don't think like that anymore. And that is all God, because I should not even be sitting here telling you my story. At the bottom of the page, this entire chapter is pretty much guiding us how to work with others, how to handle situations, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say. And sometimes it's really hard because I want to manage everything. You know, I want to keep that person sober. And I know I can't, you know, that it's totally their own path. I just have to guide them. And if I do what I'm supposed to do and I show them the way, that's all I can do. And that's really all we're required to do. It's just to be there, be a listening ear. You know, I've had a couple of situations where I got angry at someone that came to a meeting that was drunk. And it like pissed me off. And I got mad at the person, like, how could you come here and lie to me and tell me you're sober when you're not? Like me, like, it's, what do I have to do with this? You know, like, this person is sick. And where else should they be? In an AA meeting, right? And here I'm like, how could you do that to me, lie to me? Like, who am I? I'm not God. So it's, and I had to make an amends to her because I didn't feel right acting that way, but I was angry. And then I had to look at it and say, okay, why are you angry, Lisa? Are you upset because she could drink and you can't? Like, what's going on here? And I had to look at that a little further. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. The best thing, no judgment, and just stay open as a sponsor or even just as a person in your network. Page 90, if he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. Realize you're dealing with a sick person. And, you know, I have to realize as well that, you know, I'm sick too. I'm not perfect. I just need to show how I've gone through the steps and pretty much show you how I stay sober, and that's my job. I was talking to someone today on the phone, and she was like very upset because she's dating a gentleman that is a heroin addict, and he just can't get clean. And she wants to be with him. She wants to manage his sobriety. She wants to get him sober, but she can't. And I'm like, all I said to her was, listen, you cannot make another person stop drinking, stop using. You can't. That's impossible. And how do you expect to help someone when you can't even help yourself? You know, you can't give away what you don't have. When I don't feel spiritually fit, how am I going to sit there and work with my sponsee? I have to make sure my job is to stay on the beam and just basically stay connected to my higher power. And if I don't, sometimes I have to cancel with my sponsees because I'm just not there, mentally there. But then sometimes that actually helps me. And working with others puts me back on that beam. So it all depends for me, You know, I mean, we all have lives, and I also have to make sure that I balance my life out, because sometimes I can always put too much on my shoulders because I'm like a do-gooder. You know, I want everything to be perfect. I want to manage everything, and it's really hard sometimes. And I have to put my sobriety first before I put anything else. The second paragraph. Then let his family or friend ask him if he wants to quit for good and if he would go to any extreme to do so. My sponsor in the beginning, she just said, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I said, absolutely. And that's basically what I did. Whatever she told me to do, I did, because I want to stay sober. I didn't know what was good for me, so I had to rely on her. Last paragraph, never force yourself upon him. And that's what I was mentioning before. You know, we can't get other people sober and we can't keep them sober. Page 91 actually is about planting the seed. And, you know, not everybody's ready. Not everyone is ready to get sober, but if you have a willingness to get sober and you're in a meeting or somebody calls me and they're like, you know, I want to get sober, I just can't stop drinking. You know, planting the seed is basically that plant. My father planted the seed for me because my dad was in the program. So I knew the program existed. But some people don't even know that there's a program. I mean, they hear of AA, but they don't really know what it's about. So us just being an example and living a sober life, taking them to meetings and just having them listen, it's a beautiful thing, because it kind of gives you that little bit of hope that something can help you, you know. He may be more receptive when depressed. Pain equals growth. So everybody has a different bottom, and you know, I basically need to learn from my mistakes, and my mistakes are usually really, really big mistakes. Like, I have to really be low in order to learn, or else I'll keep doing the same thing over and over again because I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, you can't just tell me, okay, Lisa, he's not good for you. You can't tell me that. I have to see and feel and feel the pain in order to say, okay, he's not good for me. You know, like, it's not, those bottoms sometimes are so low that I don't even know how I got out of those bottoms. But because of my network and my sponsor and my relationship with God, thank God I did. Try to meet the sponsee where he's at. If he's not ready, he's not ready. And we can't force him to be ready. Not everyone is ready to go through the steps right away. This is something that, you know, I try to wait until my sponsee tells me I'm ready, let's do this, you know, because I don't want to force myself on people, because I could be very forceful and I don't want to scare them away. Next page. What a lot of people don't know is that this is like a disease, and they don't know like what it's consisted of. Like, there's that one paragraph way back here that speaks of the mental obsession and the craving, and a lot. I mean, I didn't know that that existed. I had no idea whatsoever, and it made sense to me. Okay, like, and it kind of made me feel okay, like, something's not right, and I knew something wasn't right inside of me, and it kind of just explained it to me. So you may want to explain that to your sponsee or someone whoever is coming to you for help. You know, explain to them that this is a condition, and we can actually solve this condition or come to a solution with our spirituality. Mental conditions surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. I cannot stop at one, and I don't even want to try any. Like I mean, it was terrible. Not even a sip, because that sip will lead me to more and more and more and more. And it's the same thing with everything else, with sweets and everything else. So willpower, I can't run on willpower. It's just not going to happen. Because some people just want to stay dry. And that only lasts for so long. I mean, let's face it, we need spirituality. We need something else besides, because we can't do it alone. But insists that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. And that's all I needed to read, that there's very little chance I can recover if I want to do this on my own. On the next page, page 93, tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. He does not have to agree with your conception of God. The main thing is that he is willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he lived by spiritual principles. You know, sharing your experience, strength, and hope with another alcoholic that's what keeps us going. That's what keeps us coming back. That my very first meeting, I was, it was a speaker meeting, and it just hooked me because I heard another alcoholic story. I was like, okay, I mean, it wasn't we didn't have all the similarities, but I got him. I understood him. You know, I was like, this is where I need to be. And everybody was happy and talking. And now I look at it like, you guys are my family. You know, I can tell you anything because you get me. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. It's a beautiful experience to be able to work with another alcoholic, to see the light shine in their eyes after being in such a bad place. It's a feeling I can't even describe. And that's what keeps me sober, and that's what keeps me coming back. I love working with other women and sharing my story, and you know, and sitting there and going through resentments and going through step fives, and you know, I get it. I was there too. I did that too, and it always helps. It helps the other person to realize that they're not a piece of garbage. I was going to say a bad word. page 94. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. And that is, you know, that's where it's at. You know, we get sober to help others, and when we help others, we stay sober. Page 95, you will be most successful with alcohol if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. That's when I was saying fit it to the person. You know, we offer friendship and we offer fellowship, and we're there for the other person. You know, there's been a couple of instances where I had to look at my spirituality, and I had to see where I was at, because my serenity was interfered with because a sponsee was not showing up. She just did not respect my time, and I had to let her go, and it felt like a breakup, and it felt horrible. But I had to let her go because it was interfering with my serenity. When it interferes with your serenity, you know, you take it to your sponsor and pray on it. And, you know, unfortunately I had to do that, but somebody else will be able to help her. I just can't. And that's okay. We have to realize we can't do this our way. If I can't figure knock on wood, I've never relapsed. My God, I hope I never do. So if I have a sponsee who is a consistent relapser and she's coming to me for help, I have to then try and refer her to like someone who knows what relapse is about and can share their experience, strength, and hope with her. I can still work with her, but that portion of her recovery I can't identify with. And that's the same with like if somebody comes to me and they're also a gambler. I don't gamble. I don't have that ism. So I would have to refer her to someone who does, because I don't have all the answers. And a lot of times they people try to come to you with other issues. Like, you're not a therapist. You're simply there to take them through the steps and also to show them the way and show them how you got sober. So now I am going to pass this over to Tracy, and she's going to finish up.
Thanks.
Step 12.
Hey, everybody. Tracy, alcoholic.
Tracy.
Okay, where are we? Page 96.
96.
Okay, on page 96. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. This will happen. It's happened to me. It's happened to my sponsee, other sponsees as well. You know, she didn't call me. She didn't call me. I gave her my number. She didn't call me. How come? You got to wait until they're willing. You think it's about you, but it's not. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you have to offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. A little further down, to spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. And I was told very early on, when I first started sponsoring, I should say, other women, you know, you cannot keep them from drinking and you cannot keep them sober. That's up to them. You are only a guide. And if I am chasing them down, I am doing them a huge disservice. A huge disservice. One of our fellowship had it failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. We just have to keep trying and putting out our hands for the next alcoholic. Next paragraph. Suppose you have a second visit to a man and he's read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. He is now showing you willingness. He's now willing to go forward. And having had that spiritual experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you're available. Or he can consult with somebody else. He can be broke, homeless. If he starts asking for money or a place to live, use the utmost discretion, because that's not sponsorship. That is not sponsorship. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. So you really have to go forth with a lot of caution there. And always give your sponsee or anybody in your network the truth, regardless. You know, like last night, Lisa was saying, I hope you don't mind me sharing this, but Lisa was saying about how somebody pointed out to her that it wasn't about her, this girl coming to a meeting drunk. You know, sometimes we need to be honest with each other and just be like, this is not about you. And maybe that was the last thing that you were thinking, you know, like, oh my God, I didn't even think about that. You know, she is in the right place. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while just isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. And this whole paragraph is all about doing service. Any type of service. Service to another alcoholic. Service at a meeting. Service in your community, service to your neighbor, service in your own household. But it's about balance, making sure that your recovery comes first. Practicing that stuff in your own household. And we were talking about this last night too. Practicing that in your home first is a real nice step. Was for me, anyway. And I remember somebody telling me, if you really want to know how well you're doing, ask your spouse. But you better be prepared for the answer. I've never asked, and I never will. Let's see. Page 98. The men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. So like I was saying, if they're asking for money or a place to live, it's a red flag. Although we do go to great extremes to provide each other with these things when such action is warranted. It may seem inconsistent, but we don't think it is. Another thing that was suggested to me, if somebody in the rooms asks to borrow money, if you're going to give it, don't expect to get it back. It's not the matter of giving that's in question, but when and how. That often makes the difference between success and failure. Job or no job, wife or no wife, bottom of this paragraph, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. So, if you're trying to steer that prospect away from that type of thinking, you might want to suggest that, try a little more prayer. Try a little more dependence on God rather than depending on me. Depend on your network. I was taught to first go to my network, first go to God, then go to my network, and then go to my sponsor, so that I did not become sponsor reliant. When I first got sober, I would call my sponsor for everything. Like, what color should I paint my nails? Oh my God. Because I couldn't make a decision. I couldn't make a decision on my own. Little things like that. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. It doesn't it's not a matter of, well, when my husband comes back to me, when my wife comes back to me, when I get my kids back, when I get a new job. Those are just excuses to put off, working your program, because none of those things will ever return, or you'll never have anything new if you're not working a good program. Bottom of the page, he should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration, argument, and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. And it has to be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. And that's a promise. If you're doing what you should be doing and putting God first and your work first, things will all fall into place. Next paragraph. These things will come to pass naturally and in good time, provided, however, the alcoholic continues to demonstrate that he can be sober, he can be considerate, helpful, regardless of what anyone says or does, if he's living the right way. Early sobriety is not the time for major decisions. Moving, getting married, getting divorced, things like that, it can cause a big stressor in your life. It's the time where you're changing your behaviors. So chances are the decisions that you're making are based on old thinking. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Did I say that right? Yeah. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. Again, excuses. You're divorcing yourself from the outcome. Page 100, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were far better than anything we could have planned. When we're listening to that still, small voice inside us, about what we're doing. Like if you guys were here and you remember me talking about the toothpick theory, doing the next right thing. That was that still small voice inside of me, even though it was just about a stupid little toothpick, But it could have been, a choice that I had to make about picking up a drink. And if you weren't here about the toothpick theory, you can ask me later. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And this is a general principle. Next paragraph at the bottom. You should warn against arousing resentment or jealousy. You should point out that his defects of character are not going to disappear overnight. Show them that he has entered upon a period of growth. My character defects are not going to disappear overnight. And guess what? I'm 12 years sober, and there are still character defects that still crop up and rear their ugly head. I'm a little more cognizant of them when they happen. I'm a little more reliant on my toolbox when they do. And those close to me in my network will call me out on my BS when it happens. A daily reprieve based on maturity. A daily reprieve based upon maintenance and growth. And just continue to remind them when they get impatient about those things, the fact that they are sober, because first and foremost, that is important. At the bottom, assuming we're spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. Another thing I was told early on is that I had a situation where I was going to a bar for an event. I think it was a charity event. And I was kind of freaking out about it. No, it was a holiday party, new company I was working at. And I shared about it at a meeting, actually. And after the meeting, a woman approached me, and she knew where I worked. And she happened to have some inside info that those parties were kind of infamous at that company, the holiday parties for drinking and goings on, let's say. So I talked to my sponsor about it, and she was like, if you are not spiritually fit, you have no business being there. So I had to pray on that and think about that. And these were all new people that I was meeting, and I wasn't comfortable. I just didn't belong there then. People have said that we must not go where liquor is served. We must not drink in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. Basically, what this is about is you need to know if you are spiritually fit. Always passing things across to your network, to your higher power, and praying on it, meditating on it. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. Going down to the bottom of the page. So our rule is not to avoid a place where there is drinking if we have a legitimate reason for being there. And that's a principle. Bars, nightclubs, whoopee parties, whatever they may be. You know, and here is a very important qualification. Ask yourself on each occasion. Have I any good social, business, or personal reason going to this place? Am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from the atmosphere of such places? If you answer these questions satisfactorily, you need have no apprehension. Go or stay away, whichever seems best. But be sure you are on solid spiritual ground before you start, and that your motive in going is thoroughly good. Do not think of what you will get out of the occasion. Think of what you can bring to it. And be of service in every capacity. Why sit there with a long face in places where there's drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it's a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. For me, when I go to those places today, I can go to a bar, I can go to a nightclub, I don't go to nightclubs, but I can if I so had to. I can go to weddings and events and holiday parties where there is drinking, block parties, what have you. And people can be drinking around me. When individuals start to show that they're getting inebriated is when I gotta go. That's when I become uncomfortable. Bobby said the other night, hearing the same story three times, I'm just like, there's a fight going on over in the corner. Somebody's just, really loud. Like, that's when it's not fun anymore, I don't mind you having a couple glasses of wine. You're not an alcoholic. You don't have a problem. It's my problem, and I can remember some family members being uncomfortable around me at family gatherings and things like that. And it was like, it's okay. When I'm uncomfortable, I will go. But I don't cheat myself out of a good time, if that makes sense. Somebody's birthday party, something like that. I'm there to celebrate them. I'm not there to celebrate, having a glass of Southern Comfort. That's just not my game anymore. Let me get my eyes back on. Okay. Let your friends know. They're not to change their habits on your account. If it's proper, at a proper time and place, you can explain to them why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. And I for sure was, because at the end, that's all I did. I isolated at home with my bottle, and I didn't feel anything anymore. I was not having fun. Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand, keeping on the firing line with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. Being of service to others, I will always be safe and protected. But I will tell you this. Never go on a 12-step crawl by yourself. It's extremely dangerous. I didn't know that the first 12-step crawl I did. Nothing happened. But when my sponsor found out, she flipped a lid. She was like, please, I appreciate what you did, but don't ever, ever, ever go by yourself again. And I never did. And I never will again. There was something else I wanted to say about that. About sponsoring others. I never got, I'm getting more out of this than you are until I started doing it. And every single time I go through this work with somebody, I have a different experience. You know, they're having their spiritual experience and I'm having another. And that's pretty cool. And I get to grow with them. And one of the things that I will tell my sponsees is that in the nicest way possible, and because I'm running short on time, I'm going to be blunt. We'll go for coffee, we'll hang out, we meet once a week for an hour, and we're going to read this book cover to cover. Page by page, cover to cover. But we're not friends. We're not going to go out to dinner together. We're not going to do things like that until we get through this work. And when we get through this work, we will walk shoulder to shoulder. Now, can you do that? Yes. I usually get a yes. Don't ever lie to me or we're done. And if you relapse, don't be afraid to tell me. It can happen. I want you to be honest with me no matter what the situation is. If you want a new sponsor and you don't feel like this is working for you, this is your sobriety, don't be afraid to tell me. I'll help you find a new sponsor if need be. But please don't be afraid to tell me, because that's your path, that's your journey. I want you to keep going. I don't want you to stop because it didn't work out with me, because I've also found that, and I've learned all of this only by experience and making mistakes, I've made several mistakes sponsoring people, and I will make more, but that's the only way I learn. I was going to say something else, but I don't remember what it was. So, we are careful never to show intolerance or hatred of drinking as an institution. Experience shows that such an attitude is not helpful to anyone. Every new alcoholic looks for this spirit among us and is immensely relieved when he finds we are not witch burners. A spirit of intolerance might repel alcoholics whose lives could have been saved had it not been for such stupidity. And intolerance is stupidity. We would not even do the cause of temperate drinking any good, for not one drinker in 1,000 likes to be told anything about alcohol by one who hates it. And again, love and tolerance is our code. Someday we hope that alcoholics will help the public to be a better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem, but we shall be of little use if our attitude is one of bitterness or hostility. Drinkers will not stand for it. After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to. Thank you. Thank you.